Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your recap episode for this week's Bermuda Championship and some golf played across the pond. We got a couple of very likable winners this week. Another pair of likable gentlemen joining to break it all down. Greg Ducharme is here. Hello, Greg.
What's going on, boys? Quite a week in golf. Two tournaments to break down today on the episode. Exciting stuff.
Exciting stuff indeed. Kyle Porter is here. Hello, Kyle.
Yeah, some of the Twitter folks would disagree about likable characters between me and Greg, mostly me, but I've been trying to get a Jimbo Fisher, Phil Mickelson joke off all morning and finally fired it off. So you can go check out Twitter for that.
Work's done. Day's done.
Yeah, I mean, it was a classic, you know, the ones that you love where I do crossover, like never seen it before type stuff.
Yeah, once you and I think it might have been U.S. Open at Brookline, where we sat in a media center together, and I got a glimpse into your process. I have not viewed golf nor Twitter the same since, and I now spend my life trying to connect golf things to pop culture or other sports or other whatever it might be, because I feel like that's the Kyle Porter tweet generator.
It is. I'm sorry for that. First of all, it's because you get lost in it, right? You'll come up with something good every once in a while, but you're mostly just wandering around in this abyss of just nonsense, and that's what my brain is like. So I'm sorry for that. The Jimbo Phil thing was like, okay, you know, two guys that took 9 figures off of some oil tycoons for mediocre performances. So I felt good about that. That's pretty accurate.
The best ones are the ones that I don't even get. I know all of these words. The order, I'm not sure about. The context is way over my head. I'm either something history related or there are some that I truly do not get.
Phil's one of my favorite subjects. So him being involved with Jimbo being fired today, which is crazy, right? $75 million. I mean, we're going to talk about golf in a second. That's wild.
So I think I saw, Greg, the other thing, and I'm not as familiar with how this works in football or especially in college football, where so he's going to get paid $77 million to no longer coach, but there is not a clause in that contract where I guess sometimes, okay, coach leaves a college. If he goes and signs another deal for $20 million a year, Texas A&M wouldn't have to pay that whole thing. They would pay the difference to essentially, quote, make him whole or whatever that buyout is. I'm pretty sure he can go get another job, double dip, get all the money from A&M and also from his new gig.
Which is just insane. And I guess it's a well-negotiated contract at the very beginning. I mean, think about how if you want to get a coach like this, you have to put that much, you got to put that all on the line. I mean, you really have to, because they're going to go somewhere else if you don't. And then they do a poor job and here we are, and you're giving away $77 million.
I think what's
insane.
And what's crazy, if you want to bring it back to golf, is I think Dustin Johnson has made the fourth most money in PGA Tour history. And it's like right at $75 million. I think the tour took it down, which is petty and silly, but I think he was right at like 75-80 million. And you think about the value that you could plug me in as the A&M head coach and they would still make money hand over fist, right? Between the TV contract, all this different things. And just the value that you've brought is like, and this is where I kind of understand why golfers would be frustrated. It's like, yeah, I'm not guaranteed anything. And right. It's like, well, that's part of why it's great. But I also understand why you're frustrated when you've got Jimbo Fisher going 7-6 and taking home 100 mil over whatever, 10 years.
Yeah. In golf, you're not really paid, maybe in endorsements, but you're not really paid for what you've done in the past. And in football, Texas A&M, that program is paid for what they've done in the past. That's, in large part, that's why if you went in there, Kyle, as the offensive coordinator, I'm not ready to give you a head coaching job yet.
Sure.
Well, but you're in there as the OC, you're going to rake it in because of what they've done in the past. And Jimbo Fisher, with what he did at Florida State, he is able to earn a deal like that because of what he did. And
yeah, it's wild. Maybe he'll go to the cliques.
Maybe they're entering their free agent and trading period. So maybe coaches, maybe managers are a part of that, but we've got some golf to chat about. And while many of us were probably sleeping, the Nedbank Golf Challenge did come to its conclusion in South Africa with a familiar name atop the leaderboard. That name, Max Homa, 66, 68, 69, and 66, four rounds sub 70 for Homa to capture a four shot victory, his fourth worldwide win since 2022. Greg, we are getting much more comfortable seeing these photos right here of Max Homa holding up a trophy on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh, he is so impressive. He's really evolved as a player. I remember, Kyle, I believe it was you a couple years ago asking about his ceiling and what he could do in majors. And the thing to me that really held him back was his short game. I didn't think it was really up to par, but now it is. And now this week, he had a great driving week and he was very good with the flat stick, of course. But when I look at what Max Homa has done recently, really since July, I mean, he's been able to finish top 10 and lose strokes ball striking, and that is a sign of a complete player. He can finish top 10 no matter what. He can win when he plays well, but it doesn't have to be complete. It's not like it all hinges on the putter the way it used to. He's got a lot of different weapons in the bag that can lead to a victory. And then this has been well documented here on this podcast. When he gets himself in contention, he is a awesome closer. He knows how to get the job done. And this one today, with what Olsen was doing, Thunder Bear, he was really putting a charge on him. And Max Homa stayed right with him and then ran away at the end.
Since mid-July, the Scottish Open, Max Homa's played 7 events. He has not finished worse than T12 in any of those. Bunch of top 10s, obviously, in the mix. Played well at the Ryder Cup. That's not even included in those 7 starts. KP, another win for Homa. And, to put this into perspective, the Nedbank Golf Challenge field, in terms of strength of field from the OWGR, was better than that in Bermuda. Like, he went overseas and captured another one.
Yeah, it's a good win. I think a couple of things stick out. One is the run that he's been on. Do you feel like it's been kind of quiet, Rick?
Yeah, there's just been a lot of attention on everybody else, right? And this is the first win of his since Torrey. So it's not like he was piling up a bunch of victories in the short term, but he's played really phenomenal golf all summer long.
Yeah, he's been playing like a top, like you would expect a top 10 player to play. And I think the two things that stick out are, one, you mentioned it earlier. I think you said since start of 2022, I went back start of 2021. The only four guys with more worldwide wins than Max Homa since January 1, 2021 are Rahm, Hovland, who both have 8. Mm-hmm. You got Rory and Cam Smith, who both have 7. I'm counting Cam's live victories because those are, I mean, this, the, if you want to argue about field strength, you could argue those live fields are better than equal to a Nedbank challenge. So we'll throw those in there. And then Max Homa and Scotty Scheffler both have 6. So that's the sort of company that he's keeping, which is, you know, it's a weird juxtaposition. We talk about this with Patrick Cantlay all the time, where the major success hasn't been there, but Max Homa is a winner. I mean, Greg, you mentioned it. He's entered the final round since 2019. So like when he got his first PGA Tour win at Quail Hollow, he's entered the final round of an event inside the top three only 9 times, which is, I mean, that's a good number, but it's not a crazy number. You know, he's not really in contention like every single week, but he's closed out 6 of those. So he's got a 66% closing percentage out, like just from being in the top three going into the final round of an event. And those are two things that, you know, is he a great major champion yet? No, he hasn't really competed, but he is a winner. And we've seen that at the Ryder Cup. We've seen it over and over again worldwide at these different events.
The major championship record, Greg, at least in 2023, this might be part of the reason why Homa's year was kind of quiet. T43 at the Masters, T55 at the PGA Championship. He missed the cut at LACC, and he finished 10th, T10 at the Open Championship, which is now currently his best finish at a major. This has been a similar refrain for Max last 2 years. Awesome winner. And like we're seeing in the chat right now, do it in a major championship.
Yeah, he's starting to get to that point where it's expected now. And I think, like Kyle, you mentioned this run being quiet. Part of the reason it's quiet is it's not a surprise.
Right.
Part of it is he's not really right there in contention. You know, he's not, I wouldn't say any of these events he should have won. And then the Ryder Cup wasn't, you know, that was quieted because they lost, even though he performed really well. But it's a sign that this is kind of the expected performance of Max Homa now. And it would probably make more noise when he either wins or when he finishes outside of the top 25 or 30 and people start wondering what's wrong. But when it comes to majors, the difference between he and Cantlay, Patrick Cantlay was the number one amateur in the world. Cantlay had a lot of success early on once he really got going on the PGA Tour. Once the injuries were kind of settled, he had success right away. For Max Homa, it's taken a long time, and his viewpoint of his own game and his own abilities on the golf course, they don't really match what they actually are, which is a rare thing. I think Patrick Cantlay has always had plenty of confidence in his own game. Now, Max Homa still wonders if he belongs or not, and majors is the next threshold. He's got to prove to himself that what he's been showing since July is who he really is as a player. And there should be no difference between that game and the game in major championships. And so it's like a mental hurdle to me that he's got to get over at this point.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the one thing, I don't know how to explain this in a way that's going to make sense, but sometimes I feel like you watch Homa and you watch him perform and he, even the stuff at the Ryder Cup, it's like, man, mentally he is like nails. Like he's like, he wants it. He's up for it. And he just hasn't played his way into contention at majors. And then you watch Cantlay, I don't know that we need to compare the two, but you watch Cantlay and this is maybe unfair to him, but sometimes it just feels like he's just such a good ball striker that he's kind of just there at the end of some of these events. Like I think Patrick Cantlay is objectively better at golf than Max Homa. And so it sounds weird that I would give Homa a better chance to win majors, but I think it just seems like, and my mind got changed on this a little bit with Cantlay at the Ryder Cup. I think Cantlay showed some stuff there that he hadn't showed before, but I think mentally Homa is up for it. He just hasn't really been in the position to do so. And he might be one of those guys, Greg, that he's only in contention at like 7 majors and maybe he wins 2 of them or, you know, something that's kind of silly like that, just because of the way it breaks.
Well, I mean, would you be shocked if he had Padraig Harrington kind of 2-year stretch? If next year at 24 and 25, he won 3 majors, would you be shocked?
I'd be surprised. I think there would be a lot of luck involved with that. I think Padraig won those at a time where Tiger dipped and there wasn't the top level that there is right now. Obviously, the players were very good, but it wasn't like Rom, Rory, Scheffler good, you know? So I think I would be surprised only in the sense that that would be to me a little, there would have to be some luck involved with him doing that.
Patrick Cantlay's played twice as many major championship rounds as Max Homa has. Max Homa is a small loser in majors, 0.09 to the negative, a tenth of a stroke to the negative. Patrick Cantlay gaining 1.2 strokes per round in major championships. So a very significant gap.
That's interesting. That surprises me.
Yeah. I mean, Homa, especially like his, I mean, he missed the cut in, was seven of his first eight majors.
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't say that surprised me because he was bad early. Right.
Yeah. So
and Cantlay hasn't been.
2020, yeah, it's really not that much closer. Yeah, I mean, it's Cantlay's just lapping him here.
He's been racking up some top 15s.
It's a bunch of top 15s.
Yeah. No, they're not yellow squares, so they don't jump off the wiki page. Where are the yellow squares? I need some color on this page.
Yeah, we need like a pink square for top 20s or something.
I thought they would do that at some point. They have not. Quickly, and we're going to move on here. Justin Thomas was also on the first page of the leaderboard. He finished solo fourth, which was a 72-66, 72-66, which is an absolute microcosm KP of Justin Thomas's season. But is this positive signs going into 2024?
Yeah, I think it's positive because he's not missing cuts, you know, and that sounds ridiculous to say about somebody that I think is kind of generationally good, but it was so bad in 2023. I mean, you look at the majors. I think that JT's somebody where it's like, okay, people expect him just to flip the switch. And I don't know that that's how this is going to go. I think it's going to be a 6, 8, 10, 12 month process. And I think he's committed to that, obviously. But I think it's going to be a while before he's doing what Max Homa is doing right now consistently.
Quickly, Greg, anything on Justin Thomas? And we'll take a break and talk Bermuda.
I think he's back.
Ooh. Really?
Yeah. No, I'm not saying he's going to be the best player in the world, but I'm starting to see Justin Thomas play the way he used to. So I think he's kind of back to base camp. And from this point on, he can go in the right direction. I think he's out of the woods. Maybe that's a better way to say it.
Base camp is very high, right?
Yes, it's very high. You know, the last base camp at Everest,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's the altitude is thin.
Yes, but you see him in these rounds of 72 hitting it in the woods sometimes, right? He's hitting in these precarious situations, and he does that when he's playing really well. So could that get better? Yes, but it could have been better throughout his entire career. But I don't see a guy now that's lost, that's searching for it. He's finishing in these tournaments in a place where he should. And it's not his best week, but it's that really high base camp. So I like what I'm seeing out of JT.
JT, solo fourth, Max Homa wins in South Africa. We are going to turn our attention to Bermuda, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
And we're back. Bermuda Championship in the books with a winner who has not captured victory in over 3,000 days, but he pulled it out. Camilo Villegas, thanks to a bogey-free 6-under 65. He gets the job done at Port Royal. KP, this is parlaying great play last week in Cabo, where he had a close call. This time, he gets across the finish line.
Yeah, it was awesome. And, you know, I watched the end of this, and he was hitting some extraordinary shot. He was trying some extraordinary shots in a very, high pressure situation in terms of winning. And, he talked about it afterwards, how mentally he's in a really good place in terms of his golf. And I think it showed, because he didn't look like somebody that was fearful of missing in one direction or the other. And that was really impressive. And, you know, obviously his story, I thought he had a great quote afterwards. I think I've got it here. I wrote it down. He said, "I love this game. This game has given me so many great things, but in the process, it kicks your butt. Life has also given me so many great things, and in the process, it kicks my butt." And I thought that was a really just poignant, and it was a cool reflection. Obviously, people know his story about his 2-year-old daughter dying back in 2020, and there's just, you know, that's an unspeakable thing. And he and his wife lived through it. And I like that. Sometimes I think guys try to, like, almost tack golf onto life. And for him, it seems like they're very connected. Like, they're like, he sees the ups and downs of each as being in rhythm with one another. And that to me is somebody who loves golf, but also appreciates life. And I really enjoyed, or I really thought a lot of, the way that he sort of articulated that after his win.
Yeah, that was interesting. And he discussed certainly being in a better headspace. He's been working with a mental coach, and maybe that stuff is much more clear for him now. And what I thought was most impressive on the golf course, Greg, is he did hit some shots in response to Alex Noren trying to chase him down, Matty Schmid trying to chase him down. I'm thinking of, I think it was on 15 where he started, 15 or 16, where he stuffed one close in there after both those guys had it surrounded. I mean, he answered the bell when asked coming down the stretch.
15 was the one where he hit the flag.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Wrapped it up. That was flag, which it was so cool. Cause they both made birdie there, and obviously so did he. So that was really important. It also could have been very unlucky. And maybe it was unlucky. I mean, you hit your target. It's a crazy thing about the game of golf. Hitting the flag or the flag stick is crazy, because it could do anything. And you hit one of your best shots of the day. So that was awesome. But looking at this card, he handled 3, 4, and 5, which were kind of middle of the road to the easier side in difficulty. 7 was the easiest hole on the course. 15 was, I believe, the 16th easiest hole on the course. And 17 was the 17th easiest hole on the course. So he didn't make any mistakes, and he took advantage of the holes he needed to take advantage of. And that ended up being enough to win. But the way he avoided the mistakes was, one, he was really solid off the tee. Like Kyle said, he wasn't fearing a miss one way or the other. And into the greens, he had a really dialed in low wedge shot. I mean, he gave himself a lot of really good looks and could have shot at least a couple shots better in today's round on the back nine alone. So this is a guy that's in control of his game, which, other than last week, is out of nowhere.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Greg. I'd like for you to expand on this, because you probably have more insight on it. But it seems crazy that at this stage, how old is Camilo?
He is 41.
It seems crazy to go from 33 to 41 and kind of pop up again this late, right? Like, isn't that's an unusual sort of path, I guess.
We had I feel like a couple of years ago we had a few 9-year droughts broken. Maybe Charles Howell the Third,
Ches Reavy,
Shea Rivet. Yeah.
I don't know why I know that.
Harris English had a long drought, although I don't think it was quite 9 years. Maybe
he was younger though.
Yeah, younger. But that 33 to 39, that used to be where all the Ryder Cup guys were. They were all that age.
Yeah.
But it's kind of shifted. And in Camillo's, when he first got out on tour, to now, it's really shifted to the young guys taking the reins. He's one of them, where he was had an amazing career early on in the 20s, in his 20s, and then all of a sudden things slow down. But he keeps fighting, and this is 9 years of getting your butt kicked. Rick and I were talking about this before the show. I mean, he was so cool, a fan favorite. He's rocking the pop collar. He's ripped. His veins are bursting out like some other kind of athlete. He's reading greens with the spider. He lashes at the ball, and all of a sudden he disappears. Completely disappears, and now he's come back. So it just shows you that they're still putting in the work. We don't see guys up near the top of leaderboards all the time. They're still trying to figure it out and grinding. And by the way, their game isn't gone. I mean, if you're shooting 71, 72, 70, high 60s, low 70s on the PGA Tour, you get run over. But that doesn't mean that your game's in shambles. It's just not quite tight enough. And something in these last 2 weeks has really clicked, where he's turning pars into birdies, making fewer mistakes. All of a sudden, a couple putts go in. The wedges end up at 12 feet instead of 18 feet, and a couple more putts go in. It's gotten tight in the right direction, and he's been really good under the heat too, which is a sign of that mental work.
Paul in the chat also reminds us that Stuart Sink broke a 9-year drought.
Yes.
Good call. Recently.
Okay, here it is. I've got the official record. Longest time between wins. I'll tell you.
Lucas Glover, right?
Nope.
Oh, he's another one, though.
He's another one. That's a good one. Yeah, I'll tell you. 15 years and 6 months.
Whew.
Yeah. If you guys get this, I'll give you $1 billion.
Lukas didn't win early.
No.
He just won for the first time last year, right?
He won Torrey, and then he won
Torrey
2 years ago, I think.
Was it in the last like 20 years?
The second win was in the last 20 years, just inside. The second win was. So the first one was like 35 years ago.
Oh, I have no shot.
Yeah, this is just not going to happen. Robert Gámez won the 19.
Sony.
He won 1990.
And API?
Okay. He won the 1990 Nestle Invitational, which I don't know what the name of that is now. I'll have to look it up. And then he won the 05 Valero Texas Open.
Should we just keep guessing?
I thought who was it that held out to win Sony, Greg?
Hold out to win at Sony.
When?
Oh, this was a while ago.
Yeah, that's a very broad question. Was it a player from Japan?
Okay. Nestle was the that's now the API.
Okay, you're right, Greg. I was thinking he holed out to win the 1990 API on the final hole.
Which was, that shot was crazy.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. It wasn't Sony. That was crazy.
That's it, yeah.
I think it was from the rough.
I'm going to watch
it. It had a ton of spin on it. With like a 5 on it.
I'm watching it on YouTube right now.
Great.
Give us the play-by-play.
It zips into the hole.
It is from the fairway. So here we go. There's impact. Big divot. He doesn't seem to particularly enjoy the shot. Lands one hop, two. It zips left and basically drops in on its third hop. Like it didn't roll in. It was like bounce, bounce, left 18 inches and straight down.
That's
that ball had some action on it.
Yeah, you know who he beat?
Greg Norman.
Yeah, Greg Norman.
Sure.
Sure.
The guy just gets people just chip in against him or pull it. It is unbelievable.
The rest of this leaderboard, pretty eclectic. We've got Villegas, Colombia, right? Norin from Sweden. Maddie Schmid from Germany.
Denmark.
Carl Yuan, China. Adam Scott, Australia. We don't get our first American until a tie for fifth in Ryan Moore. KP, I'm gonna kind of connect this a little bit to our next segment, but we'll talk about kind of the rest of the leaderboard here. You get nothing for this, but I accept a little hat tip from me.
I know
your two outright selections were the guys who finished second and third: Alex Norin, Maddie Schmid, which is so sick.
I need the what's the horse racing thing where you can do like the exact or the
like tri- a box like a yeah. box.
Yeah, I needed that. Norin, I thought it was interesting. Michael Kim, who's obviously very active on Twitter, had a thing about, I don't know if you guys saw this, but, and this is not breaking news, but he said that Alex Norin is like by far the hardest worker on the tour. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did.
Did you see who he said is? Okay, let's see if Rick can guess who he said is second. So he said it's Alex Norin. No, it's Alex Norin first, somebody else second. I think he said a couple of Koreans, but not all of them third.
the Korean players, I thought he said.
Yeah.
And extremely general.
And then everybody else was fourth.
Is this guy, he's like somebody on tour now?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. He's a top 20 player.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Rory.
No, he's also a top one player.
Scotty.
Yes.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Tony Romo.
Oh, Tony Romo. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I got the sense he's down in Texas.
Yeah. Michael Kim's the Dallas guy, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Because I think there's a lot of Korean players. I mean, obviously, like Tom Kim and, I think. Yeah, that makes sense because those guys play like Merido and different places around here quite a bit. But yeah, anyway, I thought this was an interesting look. I think Michael Kim provides some really cool insight like this a lot of times. And, Norin is obviously somebody that I actually went to school with. I think we were at Oklahoma State at the same time. And he's never been somebody that he's not a mega talent. He's not a wunderkind. He's not a freak, but he's just grinded his way to having a great, 15, 18, 20 year career as a professional golfer. So the Camilo story was great. And I think everybody was rooting for that. But I think Norin winning would have been not as cool, but I would have enjoyed it. I thought it would have been great.
Anything else off this leaderboard at you, Greg?
Yeah. Well, just on the Norin thing, the thing about him with his effort is it almost makes it look like he's struggling. Like there are some guys where like for Tiger Woods, for instance, in his heyday would walk to the range before a tournament and go through a routine. Like he knew exactly what he was doing. Nothing was surprising. There was nothing. Now there were some times when he was working hard on things, on specific moves. And usually that led to more struggles on the course. And when he was really clicking, there was no unnecessary rehearsals, nothing like that. And Norin has such an exaggerated practice swing and move. It makes it seem like he's struggling. Like it's hard.
What is he doing? Like when he does that, like almost like he's getting like super steep on it.
Yeah. He is steep. He takes some big divots. But it gets the club out in front of him. See, if the club's coming too much from the inside for a right-handed player, if the swing path is going too much to the right, you have to add a left. So basically, if you look at the path of the club and the face, you need them to oppose in order to play successfully. So if the path's going way to the right, you got to get the face to go to the left.
Gotcha.
And that's the term flippy. Or the term trapped. And that's what tour players do not want. a slicer may want to learn that activity, but it's very hard to predict. So when the path starts going left, the face can be to the right, which means you don't have to close it in the downswing. And that creates a really consistent club face through the strike. So you get really consistent misses. But he's got to work really hard to get the club on top of it so he can get a left path. But I do believe that that concept is why so many of the top players fade the ball, especially off the tee, because they want a quiet face. And a fade is a much quieter club face than a draw.
Real quick, you weren't on Tuesday, Greg, but I got fitted by your boys at Titleist.
There you go.
And the degree to which, how steep I was extraordinary. Like, I didn't realize I was doing this. It was just how I was swinging. And my club face with driver at impact was almost neutral.
Oh, wow.
Because of how steep I was.
How steep was it? You know, remember the number?
No, I think I want to say like 5 or 6 degrees, 7 degrees.
Yeah, that's steep with the driver.
It was
rule
it was,
of thumb is if you're hitting down on it with a 7 iron, 7 degrees down is fine.
Yeah.
With a 4 iron, 4 degrees down is fine. As the club gets longer, it should get shallower naturally. But
and yeah, mine stayed. Yeah. My, even like my 3, 4, 5 iron stayed really steep. So they had to fit me into. Yeah, it was like such an interesting process. And I've learned obviously so much from you and Mark, but even going through that process, you're like, oh, I don't know anything about golf, like compared to these Rick and I are over here, like, yeah. Oh, the strokes gained stuff, yeah. You know, whatever. So it was an interesting process.
That's great. That will help you.
I love the idea that they can just fit golf, like they can take anybody. And just be like, okay, well, here are the problems that you have. I'm going to give you something that can.
Well, it made me
at least mitigate.
Yeah, it made me feel like, oh, well, it's been the club's fault the whole time.
Yeah, that's it. Real quick, Alex Noren used to have, and I think he still does, and for years he had, like there's a stat called left rough tendency, which is how often you hit it into the left rough, and he just like never did it because he's got that, like, rehearsal where everything goes left to right. He never hits it in the left-hand rough. Right rough's a different story, but he never hits it in the left-hand rough.
Interesting.
It's a good way to play.
Yeah. One-way miss. Okay. We are going to talk about a few more golfers in terms of our best bets and recap how we did. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. Our best bets, of course, brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. And KP, I alluded to it. You had yourself a great week. A winner with Adam Scott over Lucas Glover. A winner with Luke List inside the top 20. Your two outrights finished second and third. But this is you peppering the board. A lot of good stuff there.
Yeah, I'm hot in the fall. I need to keep it up for the spring. Luke List was barely in the top 20. He finished T20. I felt good about fading Glover. I didn't know that. I mean, Adam Scott finished what, T6 or T5 or something?
T5.
Yeah.
Glover finished T45, which is what I not wanted, but what I was like sort of betting on there. I didn't realize Adam Scott was going to have such a great week. So yeah, no, it's a good week. My best bet didn't hit, and we'll get to that in a second, but God, the two outrights, that's tough.
I had Vince Whaley over Brandon Wu. That was correct. Mark got Camilo Villegas top 30 at plus 190. Obviously, Greg, he did a lot better than that. I was not in on Camilo this week. I saw a guy, and we talked about it a little bit, a lot of miscuts, a lot of poor play. Last week looked like an outlier to me. I was wrong.
I was wrong, too. And we talked about it on Monday. The other, and I'm thrilled, by the way, as I'm wearing my pop collar in honor of Camilo, I did not expect this to be another hot week. Part of it is Cabo is so different than this golf course.
Right.
I mean, I know that you have a lot of room off the tee in Bermuda as well, but the shots that you need in those conditions are totally different.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. But I was out on it, too. I'm glad Mark was in on it.
Our best bets were pretty darn good. 3 out of 4 in green. The only one we got wrong, KP, Nick Dunlap, top 20. What happened to the youngster?
He missed the cut. He shot, I think, 68, 71, which was disappointing. But, yeah, I mean, look, we're kind of rolling right now as a group, which I love. You love to see this.
Yeah, we are. That is a lot of black on the screen. We usually see in the standings a lot of red. So this is nice. We should do this more often.
it should be a thing.
I think this is overall. So I think what we were looking at before was best bets.
Okay. Does this include best bets or this does not include best bets?
I don't know. Josh will have to tell us. Is this everything? Okay, so this is everything. This is our matchups, our finishing positions, our outrights, and our best bets is what you're looking at right now on the screen.
Okay.
I mean, look at those win. Don't look at mine, but look, KP, 37.5 win percentage.
Yeah, me and Rick are dialed. I think it's like, Rick, the less time I spend on it, the better I do.
Seriously, honestly, that's probably true. Like, if I just handed a toddler 10 matchups and said, like, circle one side of these, that's got just as much of a chance as like me doing the running the numbers and stuff.
Because in the spring, I'll get like so steep on, I'll be like way in the weeds, and it was just disaster. And this week, I was like, I like these guys; they're playing pretty well, and right. There we are.
Here we are. All right. Well, go back. Okay, here we go. Thank you, Josh. I think this is now 3 weeks in a row that Patrick's positivity parlay has cashed. It was Ben Griffin, Taylor Pendrith, Alex Noren to all make the cut. They did. He is rocking and rolling there. Mark, as mentioned, Villegas top 40. I had MJ Duffy to miss the cut, plus 175. No problem there. So 3 out of 4 on the best ball, on the best bets. Really pad the numbers. Looks good.
It's great.
Anything else, gents? We have an interesting week next week. It's going to be RSM Classic, the final event of the FedEx Cup fall. Our recording times or our live times are a little bit different. We're going a little bit earlier on Monday for the DFS preview. We're going early on Tuesday. That is because Patrick and I will be at the Wynn for the Netflix Cup. And then this will be the last like official event of the fall. We'll have some other stuff on the Euro Tour. We'll have the co-ed event. We'll have the Hero World Challenge, but this will be the final like full-on PGA Tour event.
I can't believe the fall's over already.
I kind of agree with that. It's gone. The whole season I feel like has been long, but the fall has gone fairly quickly. I'll actually be in Mexico on vacation next weekend. So
whoop, 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 whoop. Nice.
Peace out. But no, I'm looking forward to the Netflix Cup. I think I'm jealous that you guys get to go. I think that'll be super fun for you guys to hang out, spend some time together. But I also am excited to experience it as a digital product. Like I think that part is going to be really interesting to view it on my television.
I've never met Patrick in person.
Have you guys
met Patrick?
No.
Does he exist? Is he a real person? Is he a real boy?
You're going to find out unless this flight gets canceled.
Dude, could you imagine? And we're all just that would make me think we're all getting catfished about this.
For sure. Some AI, it's some CBS AI generated project.
Yeah. That's I'm looking forward to it. He's a very interesting guy. I think there's a lot of layers to Patrick that I'm looking forward to kind of peeling back and learning more about.
If he's real, it's going to be a blast.
Well, he doesn't. The thing that I love about Patrick is he doesn't take himself too seriously. Yeah. And it's a great quality. I don't know that I definitely know that I did not have that at his age. And it makes him very you want to know more. You want to be around him. You want more from him, which I think is great.
Yeah, he's very likable. Okay. Keep an eye out for YouTube. Josh will make those rooms at the correct times, but a little bit earlier on Monday, a little bit earlier on Tuesday. And then, of course, the Sunday recap should be, you know, when that final putt drops at the RSM Classic. Big thanks to producer Josh. He does all the hard work behind the scenes. Greg Ducharme, available online at The Real GFD. Kyle Porter at Kyle Porter CBS. And you can find me at Rick Rungood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.